Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is BK12 Education Talk Radio on October 18th, 2019. It's a pleasure to be with you. I had to cancel a couple of shows this week due to my recovery from surgery, which I had last week. I'm doing fine, but I just didn't have the energy to actually sound like a human being, okay, over the course of the week. So I'm back, and I'm thrilled to be doing it because today's show is going to be about teachers as learners. We've got my good friends Carrie Burkowski, who's an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins, and my pal, Dr. Kristen Barber, who's the executive director of NILD, which is the National Institute for Learning Development. And then we've got two doctoral candidates that they know, which are Brianne Ruse. And by the way, I'm going to call both of you doctor like they do in medical school. You sign up to be a doctor, you're already a doctor. So Brianne, Dr. Ruse is going to be here. She's on the faculty now at Loyola University in Maryland. And Dr. Paula Clark, who's going to be defending her dissertation. Congratulations, Paula. Okay, you should have gone to the University of Larry, where dissertations are only 140 characters long, and they only take 5 minutes to defend. But that was up to you, okay? And you're going to be defending in November 4th. She's a doctoral candidate. She's currently a K-12 teacher, the math department chair at North High School, somewhere in Ohio. We'll find out which town it's in. So anyway, we're going to have a nice show. We're going to archive education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio, just like we always do, Facebook, EduTalk Radio, and LinkedIn, EduTalk Larry. Please check out ace-ed.org, our magazine about accessibility, compliance, and equity. Not a special ed magazine. It's a magazine for every student, every school, every day. And again, ACE, accessibility, compliance, and equity. It's a one-line magazine, so it's at ace-ed.org. Okay, it's part, you have to defend this as part of your doctoral things, Brianne and Paula. Okay, it's ace-ed.org. I want you to go over there and check it out. Okay, and without further ado, I'm going to bring each of these wonderful ladies on, and we're going to talk about teachers as learners. And I'm circling. Here we go. I'll start with Carrie. Hi, Carrie. It's Larry.
Hello. You sound better than I thought you would. I wasn't sure when you told us you were having throat problems.
Well, the problem is you can't hear the throat problem. It's inside because I feel like I don't know how to say it. I feel like I've got a really tight, itchy turtleneck on. And it hurts.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Because they
got to
do stuff. Yeah. But that's all right. Come on. You didn't have anything to do with it. I forgive you. Okay? I'm fine. I'm fine.
Good.
I'm getting my mojo and my energy back, and I feel really good about that. Okay? And welcome back, Dr. Burkowski. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
You.
Kristen, are you
good
there?
I'm here.
Yeah, the B&B girl.
I'm here, Larry.
Kristen,
Burkowski and
Barber.
I hear you. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, well, it's good for me to hear my voice, too, I got to tell you. Okay, I'm thrilled about it, and it was
maybe
fine.
Maybe we should
I'll
do a podcast on voices.
Pardon me, say it again.
I said I think we should do a podcast on voices and what does it mean for teachers and students and key stakeholders to have voices. That might
there
be a future
that,
one.
And I can tell you right now that does help to have a voice, indeed. And is it okay, Brianne, can I call you Dr. Ruse, or are you going to flunk?
That seems a little presumptuous.
You're not going to flunk. You're Dr. Ruse. Dr. Clark, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me.
No problem. By the way, where is North High School? I only have Ohio. Where in Ohio?
Okay, so we are about 30 minutes east of Cleveland in a town called Eastlake.
Oh, I've been to Eastlake. Is that where, what's his name, Don Shula was born or somebody?
Grand River. Don Shula was from Grand River, which is not too far. It's about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I've been there.
I know this kind of stuff. Up by Cleveland, along the lake. Very good. So you're the
math department right along
chair
the lake.
At North High School in Eastlake, Ohio. Pretty soon you're going to be Dr. Clark. Okay, and just out of curiosity, what's your dissertation on?
So I did an intervention with my math department teachers, and I tried to make it a reform style of professional development, which goes right along with what we're talking about today as teachers, as learners. And, right now I am getting prepared to defend, and Dr. Burkowski is on my committee, so maybe she'll count this as my defense if I do a good job.
Carrie, I'm going. If she doesn't pass, I'm going to have to cut you off on the show today. Okay. No problem.
There's no risk of that. She's going to pass.
Yeah, there's no. just what it did. You're going to do great. Don't worry about it. You're in math department chair. Bless her heart for doing that, etc. Brianne, what do you teach? You do something at Loyola.
I teach in the I do, yes. I teach in the Department of Speech, Language, Hearing Sciences. I'm a speech pathologist like Kristen.
Okay, so you're going to heaven.
Thanks, Larry.
That's true. It's true. And actually, you will love our magazine. I'm going to say this. I know it's self-serving. Go to ace-ed.org. We really like speech-language pathology in there. It's really important, all about accessibility, compliance, and equity. You guys do good work. There's not enough speech-language pathologists. I really mean that. Okay, this is great, and all you ladies, welcome today. Carrie, I'm going to start with you, and teachers as learners, and I know you and Kristen are good buddies, and you work with it, but this is a topic that fascinates you. But just before we begin, why does this fascinate you so much?
Why does it fascinate me? Because I think it's really important, Larry. We talked about this, the last time we got together, and we thought it would be great to have Brianne and Paula here, because they're in a different ed space. But we spend so much time on student achievement, student academic outcomes, and really talking about teachers almost as a mechanism by which we achieve better outcomes for our students. And I think, as we talked about last time, we have to remind ourselves that teachers also have their own personal and professional goals related to teaching and otherwise. And so, giving them the space to be learners, to not always, it be presumed that they know, math or they know biology, but just to give them the space to grow and learn, just as we expect our students to do the same thing. So it is important to me. And I also think, I think the literature also bears out that, when we permit teachers to have these other identities, they're happier in their jobs, they're more productive and et cetera, et cetera. So
we're not talking, and this is interesting, we're not focusing on the philosophical aspect of a teacher as a learner. We're literally going to be talking about the time aspect and the ability to have the time and learn, et cetera, et cetera. Am I right, Carrie? Is that more the way you look at it? We need to talk more administrators than we do to teachers.
I think there's certainly a practical side of it, and we're going to talk about that hopefully today with the other ladies. In terms of what that means. But I do think there is a philosophical side. I'm not the one to talk about philosophy, but I think from a culture standpoint and mindset standpoint, we have to talk about how teachers view themselves, how leaders also view their teachers, not just, again, as staff teaching in a classroom, but as professionals themselves and as learners.
Thank you.
So I think it's a combination of the two. Yeah.
All right. Very good. So let me ask this, and we've got great educators here. Kristen, I'm going to ask you the simple question, then I'm going to ask you to ask either Brianne or Paula. We'll give them a little time here. Kristen, what's your concept of a teacher? What is it you think about teachers, okay, or who have had the most influence on your career? Your concept of a teacher, Dr. Barber.
It's a good question. The other day I got an email from one of our teachers from NILD, one of our educational therapists, and she was thanking me for having the opportunity to be a part of the organization. She actually is one of our instructors. And she finished her email, Larry, with the phrase, "Thank you for letting me teach. Every time I teach, I learn." And it really resonated with me because I think some of the best teachers I've ever had are the ones who are lifelong learners. They demonstrate this an intellectual curiosity. Like Carrie was saying, that joy of learning, that I don't have all the answers, but I'm on this learning journey with you to discover it. So there's a valuing of learning. There's an appreciation that discoveries are still there to be had and pursued. And so teachers who, in my life, who've had the most impact on me are the ones who've invested their time, their knowledge, but also shared with me sort of this, it's okay to make mistakes. Fantastic that I made a mistake. This is what I learned from it. So I think the concept of a teacher is a lifelong learner who values the mistakes just as much as getting it right, who are intellectually curious, and who really work on a relationship with students, getting to know their students. And I'd love to hear what Paula and Brianne have to say about this, because they're in higher ed setting, they're in the high school setting, and it may be similar, it may be different for them.
Right. And by the way, I just want to mention to everybody, Kristen is the executive director of NILD, N-I-L-D, National Institute for Learning Development, all right? And they run great regional conferences, and I just want to make mention there's one coming up in Virginia Beach, okay, on November 13th, and you go to NILD.org and check all the meetings out. They're all over the country, including near where I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania next year. Okay, they're all over the place. But anyway,
good stuff. Yeah.
Hey, what can I say? It is good stuff. And you know what you said, what you're saying reflects what you guys do over at NILD. I got to tell you, it's good stuff. Should we swing to Brienne, the future Dr. Ruse?
Yep.
Should we, Dr. Ruse? Are you there?
Sure, yes. My best teachers, if I think about this question, were those who invested in me as a whole person. And I think for them to do that, they had to be wholly dedicated to teaching. And that includes, you know, this really deep dedication to the material and to innovative ways to engage students with that material. And also beyond just the material, kind of developing the student as a person who's going to be successful in whatever their next steps are.
Nice. Very good and very encouraging, I might add. The future Dr. Clark, what do you think? And by the way, future Dr. Clark, I have to ask you something. Okay, you're the math department chair at North High School. You know how you get a 200 on your college boards you used to just for writing your name?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I got a 199 because I left the ass off of Jacobs, okay? So, I'm just curious, my math boards, and I'm just curious, okay, if I had had you as a teacher, would I have done better?
Well, I would like to say you would have, yes. I'm hoping that would be the case. You know, and it really comes down to how I feel I am as a teacher, and I think that, you know, along the lines of what Brienne and Kristen were saying, I think of a teacher as somebody that supports. So if I had to give, you know, one synonym for the word teacher, it would be a supporter. And
wow.
I think that
nice.
Supporters look at learning more as a developmental stage rather than the end result only. So when I think about effective educators I had, you know, they weren't focused, and maybe in the background they were, but they weren't focused on student outcome numbers and achievement data. They were focused
mm-hmm.
on me as an individual. And some of the not-so-good teachers that I had were, you know, content experts. They were excellent content experts, but they couldn't reach me. They couldn't teach because they didn't have that vision of what a teacher is.
That's a very well put statement. You gotta have it inside you to figure out what's good. Paul, let me stay with you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do educators, and I know you have literally researched this. Now you're going to be Dr. Clark. And what do you think educators value? Okay, and you've talked to a lot of people, and you've run through, I am sure, a lot of teachers in your professional position as math department chair. Okay, you work with a heck of a lot of people, plus all the other schools
mm-hmm.
that you deal with. Okay, what do teachers, educators value within their professional work? Okay, within their sphere of influence, and I'm going to take that one step further. Although administrators all usually come from the teaching experience, Are administrators up to date on what their professionals value? So let's say, what do they value? And that, but they have to work within a system, a bureaucratic system. It is that, unfortunately. So how does an administrator deal with that? And what do you see? Paula.
Yeah, sure. So I think that there's two things that educators value, especially if they're going into it for the right reasons. And one of the things I think they value is learning. Now, that kind of like goes without saying, but I think that when they value learning, sometimes we were having this discussion in my department the other day, and someone was frustrated with their students, and we had this conversation about, you know, we value learning. We grew up in households maybe that valued learning, and, you know, obviously we're continuing our education, and we are teachers ourselves, and students don't always have that same value, or they come from homes that have that same value, and that's often where the frustration leads. So we value learning as a process, and maybe they're coming from a different background. And so sometimes that does cause, you know, that causes frustrations between what we value as teachers and what our students want to get out of our class as well. I think educators also value relationships, and they value, you know, the time that they spend with students as more than just filling that empty vessel, so to speak, but really developing relationships with their students, understanding their students, and helping them grow to the next developmental level. Now, I think the problem is sometimes administrators forget that teachers are learners. And, you know, the last time that we've experienced that support and that mentoring could have been our student teaching. That could have been it. And then we're in the classroom and we don't have that same level of support. So it goes along with, you know, my vision of what a teacher is. And I think administrators lose sight of that we are still learners. And, you know, we need that support as much as they want us to give that support to students.
And, well, let me just stay with you for a second, Paula. Do you think it's incumbent upon the administrators to understand this and give the teachers the time they need to think about what they're doing? And they do that in other countries. Okay, Finland, as an example, is known for giving teachers plenty of time and, you know, to prepare and think and all that sort of stuff. They have to think about where do you think where are we on this? I mean, you're an administrator. You know what's going on out there.
Well, and I think, you know, part of the what we were introduced in the curriculum in our EDD program was the work of Jensen and colleagues, and they're talking about just what you were talking about, that other countries in high-performing countries, they value that time. And time is one of the key aspects. Like, administrators have to realize, and I know finances are a problem, too. That's another resource that comes into play. But they have to value that we need the time and we desire the time to go observe other colleagues. That's how we're going to learn, you know, through those interactions. The same interactions that we want our students to have, you know, we want them to be collaborative, engaged, and an authentic, you know, experiences. And yet we don't do that as teachers, and we need time to do that.
And I think it's hurting us. Breanne, you there?
Yes.
Future Dr. Ruse. Okay, by the way, did I ask you? That was Paula who I asked what's your dissertation going to be on?
My dissertation is about stress in undergraduate students studying speech, language, hearing sciences. So really looking holistically at the students and their experiences.
Say that again.
Stress
Seriously.
In undergraduate students studying speech, language, hearing sciences.
What does that mean?
It means that our undergraduate students, I had observed over my 10 years teaching them that they seem more stressed and there were more mental health diagnoses now than there were before. And I wanted to do a deep dive and to understand what's going on with our students. So conducted a needs assessment and found that, yes, they are indeed stressed. And now I'm working on an intervention with faculty to help with address the stress through a different advising model, a more holistic advising model.
You know, I got to tell you, that's exactly what we're talking about. The teacher is learner. Look what you did. You observed something in your students, and you put this whole thing together. And I know it's for your doctorate, but wow, to be able to do that is incredible. Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really mean that. That's really neat. Is Carrie your advisor?
She is on my committee.
Okay. You know, you could have applied to the University of Larry. Just remember that.
Thanks, Larry.
Much cheaper, much cheaper, much quicker, by the way. Still thought. There's still thought. I'll see you there. Yeah, okay. All right. Right. What do you think of this whole concept, Brianne? You were able to do this, actually, and I know it took a lot of time to do it, but do you feel that the teachers, and even at the higher ed level where you are, okay, are they given enough time? I mean, everybody moans and groans. I'm the king of this, that professors, you know, they teach 2 hours a week and have the rest of the week off to go play tennis and eat bonbons. I'm just kidding, everybody. Don't come down on me, okay? I'm just kidding, all right? However, again, you know, even with that time, is it appreciated and is it directed and all that sort of thing? As a higher ed professor, as a learner, there's something interesting. And I want to say it this way, as an educator learner, okay, because I know a lot of, you know, I had history professors, obviously, in college, and they would spend their time, you know, learning history, which is great, but, you know, they didn't really understand too well how people learn. They weren't great pedagogists, shall we say, all right? And I'm curious, where do you stand on this, on a college professor as a learner? And by the way, again, you did a great job.
Thank you. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, and that's what I was thinking about, is that we have to be experts in two areas. We are expected to be disciplinary experts and to produce scholarship, you know, in our area of expertise, and also to know how to teach and to be innovators.
Yeah,
by disciplinary,
you mean the content. By disciplinary, you mean the content.
Right, right.
Not,
so
not
history
behavior.
Or English
yeah.
or
yeah.
speech. Exactly, right, yeah. Kind of area of expertise. So there's that demand, and then there's also the demand of needing to understand our students and and understand how to best convey those areas of expertise to them. So there's two areas that we need to be professional learners, which is tricky with time, as you mentioned.
Well, let me ask that. Is it tricky? And I'm asking this in all sincerity. Is it tricky, okay, considering that you have a very different schedule than Paula? Okay, I'm
yes.
sure. What is your schedule like during the week and during the year? It's much less classroom time than Paula. Would you agree,
I'm
Paula?
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, Paul.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure what Brian's schedule
well,
is, but yeah,
yeah.
We're pretty much
just generically
yeah, on
what
task.
We all know.
Right.
Okay. So, so do you find, let me ask this, do you find that your colleagues, Brian, are using the time wisely?
I mean, in my department, I would say yes, but I think
good.
That there are a lot of demands on the time, you know, and so it's like everybody, we have to figure out, we have to prioritize what's going to go in that spot. And at the end of the day, if you're looking at how you're evaluated, that may push some things to the top of the list. So if scholarship is evaluated more strongly than teaching, then you
yeah.
may be inclined to work on your research, you know, as opposed to learning a little bit more about pedagogy.
Right. Well, Kristen,
and
Kristen,
Larry,
when
I
you
think,
yes. yes, who's talking? Who is speaking?
This is Kristen, Larry. Sorry, I was just going to piggyback
yeah.
on Brianne and say, you know, Willower took a look at examining the micropolitics of school organizations and the three sort of top components that educators value were autonomy, order, and then time, which was what we've been discussing, and that teachers are tied to their classrooms by schedules, by their responsibilities, and they don't want a lot of non-classroom matters kind of interjecting into that time so that they really can get down to the art and science of teaching. And so I think it comes back to this idea, and we've talked about it before, about cultures. What are the organizational, the educational cultures in the school systems, whether it's higher ed or K-12, and those cultures are a part of the norms of what people value and beliefs, and that directs behaviors. And so kind of coming back to this, how do we enact the idea of teachers as learners? What is the leadership doing to support time that teachers value so that they can get to their craft of teaching? And what are we doing to help teachers to be lifelong learners and to continue to expand their opportunities to connect with students and build relationships? And so what type of leadership will it take? Is it transformative leadership? Is it, you know, are there distributive leadership approaches that enable these cultures rather than these sort of islands of teachers in their classrooms demonstrating being learners? How do we transform a culture and get the whole environment to begin to adopt
mm-hmm.
this type of mindset?
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, let me follow up on that. You know, and by the way, I think it all sounds wonderful, okay? But my curiosity would be, and it does sound wonderful, but beyond that, and maybe Carrie can answer this, the professor, okay, how do we know this even works? Okay, it sounds wonderful. Okay, and obviously giving people more time to think about what they're going to do next, about what their profession really means, to do all those sorts of things is wonderful. But are there statistics, is there research, is there something, and maybe it's Finland, okay, that says that, yes, this really works and we need to strive towards this. And I'll give that to Kristen, but she can pass it to Carrie if you want to.
Yeah, so Paula mentioned the article from Jensen and colleagues, and they examined Singapore, Shanghai, British Columbia, and help me, Paula, there was the fourth one. I can't think of who it was. While she's thinking about it, I'll keep going. But what they looked at was teacher learning related to student learning outcomes. And they looked at how much time teachers were allowed during the school day to invest in observing their peers, to engaging in critical reflection and collaboration, sort of the job-embedded coaching and mentoring. And there were statistically significant correlations between teacher learning and student learning, as well as improved student learning outcomes. I'm not sure why Finland didn't make it into that list. Maybe they just weren't evaluated. But, you know, the Europeans certainly have some interesting models that they've got going. You know, they don't start kindergarten until the students are age 8, right? And so there's the whole developmental sequence. We could get on another conversation about reading
yeah.
and being ready for that and the brain's readiness. But yeah, there are research studies out there that indicate if we invest in our teachers as learners, with high quality standards for professional learning, then it improves teacher agency. It improves their ability to connect with students and move the needle for students in their learning and thinking.
Cool.
Yeah, and just
so let me,
Larry, this is okay. Larry, this
Carrie?
Is Carrie.
Okay.
I just wanted to piggyback on what Kristen was
go ahead,
saying. Related but a little different is there's also a study it's a little older, 2005, but she did a study looking at congruence, so the idea of aligning values of professors with their departments, and she looked at departments where there was congruence and incongruence, and she found that when professors felt like their departments were aligned with their values, they were more productive, they were more satisfied, their outcomes, both scholarship and teaching, were better. And so I think these elements that we're discussing today really do bear out in the literature. So just to share that.
And I'm sure they do. So I'm going to swing back, and that's great. Thank you, Kara. And I'm going to swing back to Paula, who teaches in K-12. Okay. All right, Paula, you agree with all that, right? All this, the research and what Kristen and Carrie were talking about, right? You kind of agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yes.
And so do I. All right, and I'm sure 99% of our listeners agree with that. Okay, so now you take with that information, all right, and you walk it up to your principal, who I'm sure is a wonderful person, be it he or she, okay, and he or she, you go and you tell them this, and what will happen?
Well, I think a couple of things will happen.
And by the way,
all,
I'm not picking on your principal. I'm using your principal generically.
Right, right. So yeah. I think districts are faced with financial resource, issues, and a lot of districts might feel that they can't employ a model that gives their teachers time throughout the day to either enact with other teachers or do some research on their own. I feel like it's a constraint with the resources. But putting the resources aside, I think that showing them the results, showing them the statistics, showing them results of, pilot studies like the studies that Brianna is doing and I'm doing and
right.
Kristen has done, and showing them how effective it can be, I think they're going to listen. Now the key is, it comes down to the leadership, like Kristen mentioned. And
of course,
they have to embrace a leadership style that allows the teachers to have a voice and to make those, mistakes and to practice their craft. I mean, when you think about in this program, we were introduced to the difference between experts and novices. And, experts practice. They practice their craft. And how do teachers do that? You have to practice in the classroom. And so I think you need to bring this to your leader, and they need to give you permission to make those mistakes, to practice and say, hey, it didn't work out. Let's try something different. And, it's all about if they're willing to give up their preconceived notion of what should happen, if they're willing to give up, their power per se, and let the teachers kind of take over and lead each other. A lot of times they come to the faculty with, a list of objectives. This is what we want to work on, but they're not really looking at the user, at the people that are consuming that information, and that's where it needs to come from.
It really does. Well said, by the way. Carrie, from your perch as an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins, or Kristen, from your NIAL perch, are there any school districts or schools in the country that you know of that are really doing this and doing this well? Carrie.
I can't think of any off the top of my head, honestly, Larry. I mean, there are certainly... I've been in the higher ed space mostly. I mean, there's certainly universities that have adopted this sort of approach. I mean, University of Michigan, even Harvard,
they can.
Some smaller schools, Portland State. They've really taken an eye towards almost equating the learning aspect and the learning aspect with the scholarship. I mean, in higher ed, the accountability model is a little bit different than K-12 in the sense that, as Brianne was saying earlier, if your university, like Johns Hopkins, for example, is a research one university, so research is king. And so you may not be spending time in the classroom, but you're spending a lot of time on your scholarship, which means you're not spending time as a learner per se with respect to pedagogy. So I definitely think, again, going back to this idea of expertise, I mean, we're expected to be experts both in discipline and pedagogy, but there really is no space, at least in the higher ed experiences I've had, to admit that you don't know something. I actually, in my own dissertation, when I worked with faculty members, they admitted to me that, you know, their ability to be a learner, to be a novice, was just not something that they felt comfortable being, because their identity is supposed to be as an expert. And I think that's problematic, because I know the ladies that are on the phone, we talk to our students about being honest and telling us when you don't understand something, but yet in our own environments, we're not supposed to admit that. So how can we possibly be authentic with our students if we're not granted the same sort of permission in our own culture and with our leaders? So I think Kristen really, and Paula as well, we really need to be speaking with leaders and teachers and having these conversations and focusing more on this process. I mean, Kristen started out, the teacher she talked to, every time I teach, I learn. That's about process. You know, Paula was talking about this process of understanding and not focusing on the final product. It's really hard in the age of accountability to move away from that, but it's so important that we, you know, are able to model that kind of learning to our students so that they do leave the classroom loving learning, so that whatever problem they encounter later, we're not teaching to a test, right? They're actually questioning and inquiring, and they have the skills to learn, not just to know, but to learn how to get to that knowledge. So that's probably more than you wanted, Larry, but there's my stance.
That was good. You said something really scary, though. You said that you said it this way, that if somebody admits that they want to learn something, they're not considered smart anymore. Oh my God, you have to learn something. You're not the expert I thought you were. What kind of an idiot would have that kind of, what kind of a moron, I have to say this, if there's a college president or department head or a principal or superintendent who feels that way, what kind of an idiot is that? Let me just be blunt. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And not from you. I don't mean it from you. I just mean who would have that kind of an attitude?
A lot. I mean, I think it's, I mean, I don't have the statistics on it, but I think it's a lot more people than you realize. I mean, people write about this all the time. I mean, Brianne was talking about the stress and anxiety of her students. Okay. And I know, Brianne, in your work, it's been a little bit different than this, but our doc students are very stressed and high anxiety. And it's often because they're coming from being expert practitioners. They're shifting into an academic space, which their expertise, even though it's important, it may not have equipped them for the doctoral studies, and they are so worried about getting something wrong and making a mistake. So part of our role as educators is onboarding them and saying, it's okay to make a mistake. I mean, I know this sounds ridiculous, but I feel it. Come on, let's be honest. I am supposed to be an expert in methods, and if my student asks me a question and I don't know it, I used to get really frazzled and nervous about it. And now, I mean, Brianne, Paula, and Kristen can tell you, I just admit, I don't know. And I'm okay with that. But believe me, it's taken a long time for me to get there. And so we need to let our teachers get in that space more quickly, because it's super healthy and it's better for our students than for our teachers. So, yeah.
Ladies, I have to ask you a question. It's going to sound like a terrible question, okay? It really does, but what you're saying scares me on a lot of levels. And is this a male-female thing? Are the men having the same stress as the women?
Oh, they definitely are. They might not be.
Oh, good.
They
okay.
might not be ready to admit it.
That's good.
They might not be ready to admit it. But believe me, I have plenty of male students that are very nervous about, you know, getting something incorrect or not appearing. You know, oftentimes, Larry, in the doc studies in that first year, it's appearing to be academic or to appearing to be a doctoral student, like what does that look like, and trying to sort of situate rather than focusing on the learning. Yeah, this could be a whole nother podcast topic.
Boy, you're not kidding.
Larry. I mean, imposter
you're not kidding.
Syndrome.
It's unbelievable. Well, let's go back to Brianne, the stress expert. Okay, right? Brianne, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay, so you're going for your doctorate. You're feeling stressed?
Yes, all the time.
Oh, well, that's not good. That's not good. Okay. Let me tell you right off the bat. Okay. Had you gone to the University of Larry, things could have been so much easier. Okay. But so you see this, okay. what would you do, and we got about 4 or 5 minutes left, but what would you do, okay, to get rid of this stress and make people feel comfortable that they can ask questions and be learning all the time? This is really a fascinating thing.
I mean, I think one thing to do is to say that it actually is happening. I think in every institution, I would argue that there are teachers who are learners. So it's not like this vague, undiscovered thing. I think that if we look at every school, we'll find some people who are doing it. And we could use an appreciative inquiry approach. So looking at what is already working well and then building on that. So pull out those teachers. Tell us about your process. How is this going? And then try to build on what's already going on there. Because part of what is stressful to people is this big unknown. So you have to learn this entire new body of literature. You have to learn all these new strategies. But maybe it's happening in your school to some degree already, and that could be, you know, you can have, to Paula's point before, novice and expert, you can have some of these expert teachers mentoring people who are looking to move in this direction.
Wow, it's just absolutely, this is a fascinating little conversation. Teachers should never be scared of learning, okay? And especially educators, let me use that word, should never be scared of learning. And people, everybody on top of them should be promoting that, okay? And not, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's amazing. We got to go, ladies. You're all wonderful. All four of you, the four doctors. You can start a rock group, the four doctors. Okay.
Thanks, Larry. Always good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Just say goodbye. Carrie, talk to you later.
All right, see ya.
Kristen, talk to you later.
Sounds good.
Okay. Brianne, great to meet you. Good luck with your stress-filled the doctorate. Just take it easy. You transfer your credits. We accept all credits at the University of Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. And Paula, good luck on November 4th.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry, and thank you for allowing me to join the conversation.
Let me ask you this. What is the name of the football team at North High School?
The Rangers, the North High Rangers.
How are they doing this year?
Oh, they're a little under 50%, but that's okay. Last year they went on to district, so it might just be
a there you go.
Progress.
Well, then be like a last year Ranger. Give them hell.
I will. Finish
okay?
strong.
Yeah, good for
thank you.
Thank you,
Larry.
Congratulations to all of you. Thank you all very much. You have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too.
You too.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye. Okay, the four doctors, Kristen Barber, Carrie Borkowski. Kristen's at NILD.org. Check it out, NILD. Brianne, who's a doctoral candidate. Interesting stuff going on there. And Paula, who's the math department chair for the Rangers, North High School in Eastlake, Ohio. Okay, we're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. And please enjoy our magazine online, ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs.